Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we were visiting traffic court in the Department of Motor Vehicles and the traffic stop and the issues that might deprive you of your right to due process. Can they stop me based solely on racial profiling? And if not, how might I prove it? Is there a law prescribing the use of a speed trap? Do those cars have to be plainly marked? What to do if you're lit up by the car following you? What if it's not a black and white? How can you be sure? Do I have to allow them to search me? What if I'm a passenger? Do I have to let them search me? Should you take a field sobriety test? Are those tests valid proof of anything? Or are they just more ingrained lore than anything else? I got a red light camera ticket. Is there anything I can do? Are all traffic matters still considered criminal? And do they have to be proven at a trial? What are my prospects when I go before the judge to say that my speedometer says I wasn't going over 65, so obviously the officer's wrong? As you can tell, there's much to discuss. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about your driver's license or traffic stops or traffic court or the Department of Motor Vehicles. You want to talk about your legal rights. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Once again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Bear in mind that our attorney guests can't provide you precise legal advice. They haven't seen all the facts in your case. But they're here to help. We're happy to pass along the legal principles to assist in your decision-making. And the guidance they're giving you might not be the same as their employers or their clients. But make no mistake about it. Our guests are here to help. And joining us tonight, a former peace officer, David Uthman, from the Law Offices of David Uthman and from the San Francisco Traffic Law Clinic. The Law Office of David Uthman emphasizes criminal and DMV defense. He also is the principal attorney for the San Francisco Traffic Law Clinic, which was established in 1985 and currently represents clients in more than 5,000 traffic infractions annually in the San Francisco Bay Area as well as Northern California. This year, David Uthman was appointed to a 3-year term. Actually, this is an old print.
That is.
David Uthman is near the end of a 3-year term on the California Judicial Council Traffic Advisory Committee. The committee makes recommendations to the Supreme Court of California regarding uniform bail schedules as well as pending legislation. I could go on, but I won't. David, welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks, Jeff. It's always fun to be here, and hopefully we can get a nice, robust conversation going on traffic violations, DMV issues, anything in that area. Let's talk about it.
Well, let's get started with one of our callers. We have Steve from Oakland. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. Can you make any recommendations or tips for finding a legitimate traffic school, preferably online?
Well, you know, there are a lot of traffic schools, and it's actually not that difficult from what I've observed to start your own traffic school. The bar is relatively low, and there are hundreds, maybe thousands of traffic schools that are approved by the state of California that that would satisfy your obligation to go to traffic school.
Let me jump in for a second.
Please.
Steve, you asked, you had one word that struck me as being curious. You asked about a legitimate traffic school. Are you looking to go to traffic school for a ticket, or are you looking to train a youngster, or where are you going with this?
Ticket.
Okay. And you want somebody that's a little more straightforward instruction rather than entertaining you?
Well, yes, but beyond that, even as in an initial search and looking up Yelp reviews and cautions about less than clear pricing. And then by the time someone goes through the whole process, they're paying more than they expected, et cetera. So if you have any tips, yes, I understand there are hundreds, thousands of them. If you have any particular tips to avoid these kind of borderline scams in terms of extra charges that are not plainly clear from an initial search on their website.
You know, it's been a long time since I had to go to traffic school.
Me too.
But there was one I went to I just realized how many years ago this was, but one run by the National Traffic Safety Institute, I don't know if they're still around, but they operated several. They're very serious. Your instructor was often a highway patrolman. Are they still around, Dave?
I don't. There are NHTSA traffic schools, so to speak. I don't know if they're actually the ones that are approved for to clear your ticket. They may be, but oftentimes people have to kind of go to higher level traffic education because they got in more serious trouble. For example, they were stopped for a 2-point violation, going over 100 miles an hour, or reckless driving, and then maybe they got court diversion.
Just an illegal U-turn.
Yeah, so this is just like basic traffic school. My office oftentimes refer our clients to traffic schools where we know that they're very inexpensive, and our clients really appreciate that. If it's possible for you to leave your contact information with the when we end the call, I'd be happy to email you that information tomorrow.
That's very thoughtful. Perfect. Thank you. I'll do that. Appreciate it.
Okay.
And how many people haven't at one point done a U-turn, looked up, and seen the no U-turn sign? There comes a point where you're committed, but at the same time, maybe the sign became visible afterward.
Well, the other problem with U-turns is if it's in a business district, it may not be marked, but we're expected to understand that we're in a business district, and that's just straight up illegal. So it's not always easy for everybody to remember. U-turn's sometimes can be a little bit of a tacky ticket, so to speak. But I'd be more than happy to give you information on traffic schools that we know are very competitively priced. I can't speak for the quality of the education, but, very competitively priced, fairly priced.
And after all, you don't want to be getting further tickets. And if you want to know how, whether it's the highway patrol or the local police agencies, how they're currently managing the highways, so you're not picking up future tickets, there's no place else to look but at a traffic class. So you want to make sure that they're serious rather than making it all about a pizza, lunch, and comedy.
Sounds good.
Alrighty, Steve, I've asked if she can take your call back and Joanne can grab us your number. Joanne, is that something we can do? Alternatively, if that doesn't work, maybe you can dial us right back and tell her that we've asked for your number, and you can pass it along. I don't want you to give it to us on the air.
Agreed. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. So what issues are bubbling up now? I understand that there are some issues with the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Yes. My firm does a lot of DMV cases, and it spans quite a large gamut of cases. So a lot of people are familiar with what's called the administrative per se, admin per se cases, and those are the DUI, those are the DMV cases that are related to a DUI arrest. So if somebody's arrested for a DUI and there's evidence that they were driving with a blood alcohol level of 0.08 or above, a DMV case is also initiated. They call it an administrative case, where basically the officer will sign a declaration, submit it to the DMV, and if the declaration has all the elements in it, the DMV will basically suspend your license, first-time offense for 4 months. There are ways to get it back sooner, but there are other types of DMV hearings too. There are, for example, lack of skill, lack of knowledge, and those can arise out of all sorts of different circumstances. For example, if an officer sees somebody driving and they think that they're having trouble maintaining their lane, they're not under the influence, or they try to pull somebody over and they don't stop fast enough for the officer, just about anything. It can be very subjective.
I've had those where a driver appears to be confused, is having trouble navigating the road, maybe drifts to the wrong side of the island and then tries to fix it. Those can be very dangerous situations, but they can also cause an officer to form the opinion, maybe this person is too confused to be driving.
Absolutely, yeah. So they have boxes on this form, and that's one of the boxes is confused, exactly. It honestly could be just about anything. So then they'll stop the individual, and they're obviously going to screen them to see if they're under the influence of anything. If they're not, then it's in the officer's discretion to refer that driver to the DMV. Basically, they'll call it lack of skill, like your skill is not there, or lack of knowledge. You don't understand the rules of the road. They'll refer the case to the DMV. It can either be an expedited case where they say that this is so serious that you need to contact the DMV within 5 days. If you don't, they're going to suspend your license immediately, or a regular reexamination, in which case they're not going to suspend you right away. But if you don't respond to their inquiry, you will get suspended. So you're entitled to a hearing in these type of situations to try to contest or explain what you did, to try to stop the DMV from taking further action against you. Previously, and then there's also like negligent operator where you too many points. There could be all sorts of variations of why the DMV either suspends your license or threatens to suspend it.
Now, if you have somebody with a reexamination, is it possible for the DMV to suspend first and then set the hearing after?
Pretty much it is. If they consider it a serious, if the officer considers it a serious event. If they consider the conduct so serious, they will issue the reexamination paperwork to the driver, and they'll check the box priority. And so that means that the individual has to contact the DMV within 5 days to set up a hearing. If they don't do it, the DMV will suspend their license. Now, my experience is with most clients, even when they do contact the DMV within 5 days, the initial hearing is somewhat, I hate to say, of a kangaroo court, because it goes so fast, and the hearing officer generally will put so much weight on what the officer says, and then most individuals don't really understand exactly how to structure their response or their defense, that I'd say like 80-90% chance, even if you respond, your license will still be suspended. Then you're entitled to have another hearing after that. A lot of cases, my office will be retained to represent people. I can step in and counsel my client and basically help them understand what issues we need to present at the hearing, and then work on either not getting a suspension or getting your license back as soon as possible. But the whole point of this is that previously the DMV localized these cases, regionalized these cases. So there are field offices in like all the areas of the state. So there's a San Francisco driver safety office. There's an Oakland driver safety office. There's Monterey Bay. Like all the areas in California were regionalized. The reason why is because they wanted to let the respondent, the person who needs to deal with this serious issue with the DMV, they wanted them to have local access to their DMV office.
Also, the hearing officer might know where they're talking about. They might be familiar enough with the area to really perceive it and understand it.
Yes, California is a big state. So exactly, there's so many issues, so many elements going into having a fair hearing, and that's a very good point. The hearing officer needs to have, should have local knowledge as well in order to accurately evaluate a claim, you know, a claim of inappropriate driving. So it was localized, and I thought that was a very good system. You'd have the same hearing officers. It was sort of, you know, so it's like California is a big state, but then you weren't being treated like it's a big state, but now you are. Now they have they've done away with that system. They have one clearinghouse. They send every single case to one clearinghouse, and then they will assign it to the first available hearing officer. However, I've discovered that that's not necessarily exactly how they do it. But the bottom line is that my office does maybe 3, 4, 5 hearings a week, all different types. And previously, we were localized. For the last 6, 7 months, virtually every case I had has been sent to Southern California, San Diego, Los Angeles. I think it's statistically impossible for those cases to be randomly assigned. However, that's what I'm told. But I have talked to other hearing officers off the record, and I think that there's more going on than that. But anyway, the whole system's been redone. So now you generally don't get a local hearing officer, and that can create all sorts of issues that are not good for the driver, not good for the respondent.
And before the pandemic, we used to be able to have, you know, right to in-person hearings. Do they do that anymore?
You still technically have a right, but they really discourage it. And if they assign the case to a Southern California hearing officer or a hearing officer outside your area, they're making it very, obviously, very difficult for you to have an in-person hearing. And there could be a lot of value to having an in-person hearing. That way, the hearing officer can look you in the eye. You can look the hearing officer in the eye. They can evaluate you if there's claims that you are losing it mentally, if you're incapacitated, whatever. There could be plenty of reasons why you would want to elect to have an in-person hearing, but now they've made it very difficult. They've substituted it for Microsoft Teams hearings, like a Zoom hearing. But in my opinion, that's not the same as having an in-person hearing. So they've largely, although you, I think you legally have the right, they've largely put so many obstacles in place that you're not going to really be able to exercise that right.
So one of the things I've heard about are speed traps. What is a speed trap under the law?
Well, speed traps are illegal, and that is where that's a situation where the government, the police, are doing unfair, what would be considered unfair speeding enforcement. So basically, the law says that in order for an officer to be doing speed enforcement, they need to be in a clearly marked patrol vehicle. Technically, there should be the door should be painted white. At least the two front doors should be painted white under the law. And the officers should be in a distinguished uniform. And then if they're doing radar, LIDAR, there needs to be appropriate traffic surveys. They need to take into consideration average safe speeds. There are a whole host of obligations that they have to abide by. So speed traps are illegal. Speed enforcement has – there's a higher bar for speed enforcement. There are more rules for speed enforcement to be done fairly, but now they're trying to push automated speed enforcement. That's a whole nother issue.
Seems to me I was watching on the news with the highway patrol using essentially unmarked cars, a step short of camouflaging the cars. Is there a possible defense under the speed trap laws?
Highway Patrol, they're crafty, and they know what they're doing. They're a smart agency. They have lawyers working for them. I mean, not that you need lawyers working for them, but these guys, they're very well versed in the vehicle code. So to that point, what it says about marked cars is that they have to be distinctively marked. And the door, at least one door, like the driver's door, the front passenger door, the front driver's door, has to be painted white. So what the CHP did to be in line with the law, but to create what they refer to as ghost cars. I mean, they literally refer to them as that, ghost cars, is that they paint them all white. They have the CHP logo or emblem, the you know, it says Highway Patrol and it has the star on the front door. But because they are all white, they are a lot harder to spot than the normal black and white CHP cars.
And yet that meets the criteria? They don't have to be black and white.
They don't. It just has to have a white door.
So talk about the reason for the traffic stop. Can they stop me based on racial profiling? And assuming they can't, how can I prove it?
Well, they cannot stop you based on your race. They can't stop you just because of how you look, especially race-based. That is completely illegal. They have to have reasonable suspicion or probable cause to pull you over. So, you know, everybody understands that maybe some cars get pulled over more often than others and that officers do size people up and racial profiling does happen, but it's not necessarily that easy to prove. However, if you do suspect that you've been stopped purely for that reason, you should right away ask the officer why you're being detained. You should ask that specific question. You also have a right to try to video this, you know, video the encounter. You can turn on your cell phone. You can turn on the video. The officer might get a little upset. They might try to dissuade you or tell you to turn it off. But legally, you have a right to turn it on.
And both of those last two points are new law this year.
Yes.
As of the first of this year, number one, it is not resisting, delaying, obstructing for you to record with your cell phone.
That's right.
That's a new change of law this year. The second thing that's a change of law this year is they are obliged when you are pulled over to tell you why they are pulling you over.
That's right.
And the two questions that I would recommend asking very politely, attitude is your enemy. Don't convey attitude. But very politely ask them, why did they pull you over? And never be afraid to ask politely if you're free to leave.
100%. You're so right about that. The law is so specific about the officer must provide a reason why you're being stopped that they had to reprint all of the traffic citations to comply with that law, because not only do they have to essentially tell you, they have to write it on the citation. So all citations as of the beginning of the year, the officer is obligated to write that on the ticket. And you're absolutely right, too, about the way you approach it. The smart way to do it is to be polite but firm in your, you know, firm in your questioning, but polite, as polite as you can be. That way, you're basically doing everything you can to make that encounter, make the officer justify what they're doing or otherwise let you go.
Remember, you are creating a record. You want to create whatever record you can if you need to use it for your defense later, but you're dealing with somebody with quite a bit more power than you have in the situation. So your attitude is going to be key. You want to be the person that they don't want to throw the book at.
Yes, absolutely. I was a police officer a long time ago, and I can tell you that when you pull somebody over, if the person is like very nice and very polite, sometimes it's a lot harder to write the ticket or do an enforcement action with them. And they have a lot of discretion. If they're not obligated to arrest you, if they're not obligated to cite you, they may just give you a warning and let you go. On the other hand, if the person is copying a lot of attitude or if the person is being angry or you know, confrontational, it's a lot easier to write the ticket. It's like, gee, this guy's not being nice. I'm going to write the tickets. It's just basic psychology. So, you know, you're always better off. You know, like the old saying, you'll get a lot more flies with honey.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're discussing your traffic stop, the traffic court, the Department of Motor Vehicles, and your legal rights. If you have questions, my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. 4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about your driver's license, the courts, your legal rights, the agencies that govern you, the ones that do the hearings. You're not limited to jump in the exact point we may be in our conversation. Before we break, I do want to ask you one last question. You're lit up by the car following you. It does not appear to be a black and white. How do you know for sure?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a good question. Because it could be a nefarious individual. It could be that they're up to no good and they're pretending to be an officer, and you're making yourself vulnerable to a serious crime. You could be a victim. On the other hand, there are unmarked police cars, and those unmarked cars are equipped with red lights, and they do occasionally stop people. So it's a tough call. But I mean, if it was me and I saw red lights behind me, I think that I would stop, you know, because I don't want to have further trouble. But if there appears, like Jeff was saying, turn on your cell phone, be vigilant, ask questions really fast about why you're being stopped. And if anything appears weird or odd, you probably want to call 911 start thinking about ways to potentially extricate yourself from there if, in fact, it turns out it's a bad actor that's playing games. It doesn't happen that often, but you obviously need to be careful.
Dale from Daly City, welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you. I had a question, but I wanted to comment on that because what popped into my head was if somebody's in an unmarked vehicle and they have red lights, I'm calling 911 and verifying that they are who they are pretending to be or not pretending to be.
Yeah.
The car behind me, is that legit? I'll pull over, but otherwise tell me how to get to the closest police station. And I'll pull in there. Sorry, my question was, I have a number of bridge toll violations. Because I lost my, a fob or whatever the thing is, and I can't find the darn thing, and I just go through. And so if they see, you know, I have $150 in bridge toll violations, does that pull up on their screen if they're following me, or do they have to, like, look into it?
Well, if a police officer is pulling you over, I think it's unlikely that they will see that type of violation. However, if they run your registration, what will happen is that eventually they're not going to let you renew your registration. Then,
right.
Yeah. So then you won't, you know, if you're going to have expired tags, they'll pull you over. If your tags are expired long enough, they can literally tow your car and keep it, you know, until you clear it up. So, but no, I don't believe that they have that information readily available. And the, you know, that's going to the registered owner of the car, and the person driving isn't always the registered owner. So, but no, I don't believe they have that information. Like, for example, San Francisco Police Department, they do keep their own records. So, like, for example, if you're stopped by SFPD and they ask for your driver's license, back to the car, they can do their own local records check, and it can show all encounters that you've had with SFPD that were not necessarily a conviction, but just encounters. So they, you know, they can get background information on you once they identify you, but to that particular, in that particular way, no, I don't think they're going to do that. Yeah.
And I'm okay if I pay it before I go to register my car, I'm guessing.
Yeah. You probably want to take care of that.
Definitely stay on top of it, but you'll hear from the DMV before you really have a problem.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And a moment of personal privilege, if I may. I came to this broadcast to take over after my friend Chuck Finney passed. It's been a bit over 7 years. I do nothing about radio or how to participate in this show, much less be the one to host it. It was a skilled person at the controls who taught me the difference between Shinola and something that probably has a more foul odor. Years of radio, great experience, and knew how to run this show, and was was operating the controls at this show for Chuck Finney for as far back as I could know. That, ladies and gentlemen, is my good friend Joanne Marr, who has been at the controls for many, many years. Tonight is Joanne's last night hosting this broadcast. I wanted to take a moment of personal privilege to thank her for many, many years for Chuck and now for me, really being on top of the game and able to set me straight when I did dumb things at the beginning, like giving out the wrong phone number or not quite knowing the format or when to break. Joanna, we would not be on the air but for you, and I want to thank you on behalf of everybody.
Oh, Jeff, you're too kind.
No one accuses me of that very often, and that's well-deserved, Joanne. This show would not have survived but for you. Let me take a call from David in Berkeley. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for taking the call. Hey, I just wanted to relate a story about something that happened to me a few months ago. I was leaving a music venue in the Bay Area, and it was a little bit before 10 o'clock. I was there with a friend, and I'm driving. I had one drink at the venue. I'm leaving town. I'm about to get on the freeway. I'm at a stoplight, about to turn red. It's a red light. I stop completely. And I wait a millisecond, and then I start to go, and then all of a sudden the light bars are there. And police officer, local police officer, just pulled me over, asked me if I'd been drinking. And then all of a sudden there are four SUVs behind me with the light bars rolling. And the first officer, you know, I told her what was going on, that we just left the show, blah, blah, blah. And they put me through all the paces, the physical tests and everything. And then at one point I said, you know, hey, look, I'm a certain age. I can't even do this first thing in the morning. I just can't do it, very, very politely, very nicely to them. And so I said, can I take my boots off? And they said, okay, yeah. So I sat on the curb, pulled my boots off, which I don't usually wear. I'm wearing them to this music thing, whatever. It wasn't even country western, by the way. But anyway, so they put me through the paces. One of the officers is really impatient with me when he's doing the follow my finger test, because I've never gone through this before. And don't turn your head. Use your eyes. Look at my finger. And he's rather curt with me, and I'm super cool with them the whole time. But the questions that I have, first of all, the going back to the place where I was making the right turn, the SUV, the police officer's SUV had a green light, but they weren't moving on the other side of the intersection. And so I took the turn, and I'm about to get on the freeway, and the light bar goes. And so my first two questions, one, do they run the plates before they even stop you? And then two, if you think the place they want you to stop is unsafe, do you have any right to keep going until you find a place that looks like it's safe? And then the third question is, why would they have four people? I'm like saying that's got to be $800 to $900 an hour for that staff to be doing this with me. And then the young man who did the breathalyzer did it twice. He didn't give me the numerical values the first time, gave me the numerical values the second time. And they let me go. I was fine. It was all, that's the short version. But I was, you know, I was super cool with them. I cooperated, looked them right in the eye, tried to comply with their requests, but I you know, on some of the physical stuff, I just was ridiculous what they were asking me to do. So those are my questions. Do they run the plate? Do they know who you are or know who your vehicle is before they pull you over or who their vehicle belongs to? Can you try to move to a safe place? One of the other callers talked about going to a local PD if they didn't think the officer was the real deal. And then I just thought it was astonishing that there were four of them.
Let me jump in and ask you a question.
You know? Yeah.
Where were you in relation to the music venue? Did you think they followed you from the venue and maybe presumed that you'd be an easy hit?
And they could have. And the reason I thought they might have is because I aced out a great spot. I mean, I had a parking spot right in front of the doors. And to get that spot, one would logically conclude that I must have gotten there like 4 hours earlier. But in fact, we were only there for about an hour, you know, like the last hour of the show. And I just lucked
out. Did you get pulled over just after leaving the venue?
Yeah, but it's like from the venue to the on-ramp, it's got to be at least 2 miles.
Okay, let me turn it over to my guest because you've asked several questions.
Yeah, I'm curious. You said four cars showed up, which would oftentimes indicate that you were in a area, jurisdiction that's less busy than like a more urban area. Was this in a larger city, or was it in a more suburban area?
Small city. I'd rather not say which.
Yeah,
one.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
But I guess what we're trying to find out is. Is it possible you're in an area that is called by the city, but it's actually outside of the city limits in an unincorporated area?
Probably not, because they were all PD, not county sheriff.
But the thing is, sure. So like with regard to the number of patrol cars that show up, like I said, I was a former police officer and I'm a criminal lawyer and I talk to a lot of clients in similar situations. And what I've observed is on that one is that if it's a smaller jurisdiction, they are literally oftentimes less busy and more anxious to go out and do something they might consider exciting. So that could explain why four cars showed up. Like if you were in a more urban area or something, that, you know, there may have just been the initial car, perhaps one
backup
unit.
And that the same is true in the exact opposite. Usually places in the murky middle where things happen, but it's not that bad, are not going to send four cars. But if you're in a really bad area where things happen, they could do that for officer safety, just as in a really slow area where they all think there's something interesting happening, let's all jump in on it. And in the middle, you're not going to get four cars.
Yeah, it's true. But for a DUI investigation, that's unusual to have four cars out there. That tells me it's likely a smaller jurisdiction. I'll just throw this out there, but I had a client, I was just working on his case today. He was cited for reckless driving for driving 100 miles an hour in Atherton on the El Camino Real. And he told me four officers showed up eventually to the investigation. At the end of the investigation, he ended up with a ticket for, he had psilocybin mushrooms in the car, so he got one for that, and then he got one for reckless driving. But I was a little surprised to see four patrol cars there too, but it's a small agency. But to your other points, first of all, do they run you? They can. They don't always, but they do have that ability. So what they can run the license plates and then, you know, see who the registered owner is. I think I've mentioned earlier that the car can be registered to somebody. That doesn't necessarily mean that's who's driving. But it's not uncommon for them to do it. But on the other hand, they don't always do it. It just depends on the officer and the situation. But they do have the ability to do it. Now, your point about your question about going to a safe location, that is a very good question. Now, earlier I was talking about how people are referred to the DMV for lack of skill, lack of knowledge. That is actually one of the most common reasons why I've seen people refer to the DMV is that the officer will allege that the person did not stop soon enough, that they went past many, you know, areas where it was safe to stop. But to your point, you are honestly obligated to pull over in a safe area. You know, you like, if there's no shoulder on the road, you can't stop. Like, you can't stop on the freeway if there's no shoulder or on a road. Like, you need to be able to get to a place where you can get your vehicle out of the lane, but don't go too far. Like you need to basically find the closest safe place to spot. If you're on the freeway and an exit's not too far, you can take that exit. But also, you want to be careful to listen, because sometimes the officer will start giving commands on their PA, you know, on their PA, on their public address system. They'll start saying, pull over, or don't stop. Like, they'll start giving you commands. Again, if you don't hear the commands, if you don't listen, you keep going. Let's say that you're not intoxicated, you may end up having DMV trouble. They might refer you to the DMV on that. But yes, you should find a safe place. The safest place that you can find, like, you know, don't keep, like, the closest safest place is where you should stop. Absolutely.
Well, that's what I tried to do, and they didn't complain about where I stopped.
Yeah.
But it was sort of it took me aback. And you know, one thing from that is like, hey, man, not drinking.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, and one and done, and that's it, man. That's it.
Yeah.
Too much to lose.
Yes. Let me tell you one other.
Could David have said, I've only had a small amount. Can we jump ahead and take the breath test so that maybe you'll save a little time and know that you don't need to do the other stuff?
100%. So, first of all, yeah. What people don't understand is that the field sobriety tests, you are not obligated to do any of them. You don't have to do any of them. And honestly, you know, most lawyers will advise clients to not participate in them. You're just like giving them evidence against you. So, you know, a lot of times, I mean, you have a right to decline doing them. On the other hand, if you know that you're not impaired, you know, you want to, you know, appear cooperative, you know, maybe you just want to do it to you know, just make the encounter go by fast. They can see that you're not impaired. But you are not obligated to do those. The only thing you're obligated to do is that if you are arrested and charged with a DUI, under the implied consent laws, you are obligated to provide a chemical test of your blood, either breath test or blood test. If you don't do that, you can lose your license. You will lose your license for 1 year hard suspension on a first offense.
And one exception that's also noteworthy is for somebody who's already on probation for a DUI, you have to take that test on the side of the road. Nobody else has to take that portable breath test on the side of the road. But if you're on probation, you have to do it.
That's right. But it's a little bit tricky, because the portable portable breath test that Jeff just referred to is called a preliminary alcohol screen. That is not the official test. If you're charged with a DUI, you'll have to give, like, they'll generally give you the choice of providing like a higher level breath test on a stationary machine that's a little more accurate. That device is considered a little less accurate, although the accuracy is pretty good. But to Jeff's point, if you're on DUI probation, then you're actually obligated to provide a sample of your breath with that portable device as well. You don't have the same rights to not do things as you would if you've never, if you're not on probation. The bottom line is that you, in general, you don't have to do the field sobriety tests. And honestly, if you do think that you might be impaired, you're better off not doing them. You're better off declining, because all you're doing is just giving them evidence against you that you don't need to provide.
And I've never seen a case where they say you passed this one test. Legally, all it is a chance for them to make observations. But when they're telling you the story, they never say you passed one of the tests.
And that one test that officer was getting impatient with you with, they call that the horizontal gaze nystagmus. That is one of the most ridiculous, unscience-based tests that they do. There are so many, they're looking for your eye to bounce at extremities. And it's like, virtually everybody's eyes do that at a certain point. It's like, it's just ridiculous. But also, what they're claiming when they do these tests that they're also observing your ability to follow instructions. Yeah, because that could be a sign of impairment. Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things that the common theme for all the tests, if they're worth their weight, if they're worth anything, is to test your ability to follow their instructions and do something physical at the same time. They're looking for divided attention. They're looking to, can you watch the road and your steering at the same time, monitoring your speed? They're looking at your ability to do two things at once. And any officer that doesn't understand that point will give you simplified version of the tests that are worthless in evidence, but they stick to their guns.
Yeah. 100%.
Well, I just want to make one observation about the officer who gave me the test with the little machine. Two observations about that. The machine looked ancient and highly worn, and the officer seemed like he had never done it before, but he was in his 30s for sure. And so I thought, well, maybe this is a training. You know, maybe those four cars, they're actually training people to do this. That went through my mind as they, you know, as I was watching the dollar signs of the salary.
Those portable machines are thrown into the cars and carried around a bit, and they show the wear. They're generally pretty accurate, but there are certain things that will fool machines, and the portable machines are far less capable of catching those mistakes. Whether it's you drank recently enough that there's still some alcohol in your mouth, or maybe you've got a false tooth, a temporary crown, or whatever it may be that's catching some. There's all sorts of things related to the medication you take or things that might create a false reading. And the machines in the police station will know that the curve isn't going up at the right rate. There's something wrong here, and they'll spot it, whereas these portable machines are less capable.
Your instincts might have been correct, too. It's quite possible they were training another officer, too. That commonly happens. So.
And especially when you've had next to nothing to drink.
Yeah.
Taking the portable may be able to send you on your home a whole lot earlier than going through the exercise. David, I've got to take another call, but I want to thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Really fun to talk with you guys. Take care.
Thank you for
calling. And you as well. And while we're in Berkeley, let me turn it over to James in Berkeley. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. My question is about stoplights. There's an intersection in Berkeley going south on Shattuck. When you're approaching Adeline.
I know that intersection well.
Oh, good. Well, there's a very broad white line for about 100 yards before you get to the intersection that separates traffic on Shattuck between going on Shattuck or turning and going off onto Adeline. Now, at that intersection, there are stoplights for the lanes on Shattuck that continue on Shattuck because they cross the northbound lane of Adeline. Whereas when you're going south on Shattuck, you're approaching the southbound lane, and you're not crossing any intersection at all. And so I was there, and it was a little bit of a light rain, and I noticed three motorcycle police officers talking with each other. And then I went through the intersection. It's actually an off-ramp from Shattuck to Adeline. I went on that. And then I was pulled over, and I noticed that a couple of other motorists were pulled over by the other two officers. So my question is, this to me is very ambiguous, and I'm wondering if it's even required to stop, because it seems to me that if it is an intersection where you're required to stop, there should be stoplights on either side of that part of the road where you're on the basically an off-ramp from Shattuck to Adeline.
I think what you're referring to is a channelizing lane rather than an off-ramp. And
that's correct. It's a channelizing lane that serves as an off. It's not a ramp at all, but anyway, an off. Okay, go ahead.
So were you cited? And what were you cited for, if so?
I was cited for going through a red light.
Okay, and then your contention is that you did stop at the limit line, or I'm sorry, maybe no. I just didn't quite follow everything?
No, I didn't stop. I took it as the gentleman called it a certain kind of lane. I took it as a lane.
Well, let me ask you this. Where was the stoplight in relation to where you were?
Yes. Now, there are two lanes on Shattuck that go to the left. I'm going to the right. And they continue on Shattuck. And they're across the intersection the Adeline intersection.
Right, but the more important thing is where was the light in relation to your car?
Well, I don't think there was a light in relation to my car.
Okay, I can tell you a rule of thumb.
Okay.
With very rare exception, and the exception is when you're making a left turn. Otherwise, whether it's a stoplight or a stop sign, in order to govern you, it generally has to be to the right of your car. So if you've got a lane divider, so you're in a channelizing lane, and the only control is to your left and not to your right, and you are proceeding straight or to the right, it's probably not governing you.
You know, one thing that I can tell you, because unfortunately I'm not familiar with that area, so I'm having a little bit of a, you know, difficult time imagining exactly what happened. But one thing I can tell you is that it sounds to me like two things. One, they were doing a concerted enforcement action. So this was this Highway Patrol or Berkeley Police? Do you know?
I think it was Berkeley Police.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So this was an enforcement action. So they had, you said they had three motorcycles out there. So what that tells me is that they are having a problem at that intersection or at that interchange. They have identified a problem there with enforcement, with whatever type of enforcement that they're, with the red light enforcement that they're trying to do there. They've identified a problem. They're doing a concerted enforcement action there. So, they're taking the position that it should be obvious, that it should be clear. But it could be, to your point, that it is not clear. And that's why a lot of people are making the same, what you'd call, I guess, mistake. And so that's explains why they've identified it as an area where there's an enforcement problem, you know, where people are not obeying the traffic signals. So it could be, to your point, that it's confusing.
Well, oftentimes, right, when you see a concerted effort like that, it could be that people are violating pedestrian right of way, or that there's accidents there, or even a merchant complaining that it's too dangerous to walk around.
Well, there's no stop sign or a stop light to the right, none at all. And there's only stoplights to the left for these other two lanes on Shattuck that cross the northbound lane of Adeline. There is a sign that says something to the effect that if you stop on the red, then you can go. And I think that's an information sign to not clog up the intersection. I paid the amount of the fine, and I'm going to court, and I have photos of the intersection. So I'm going to try to talk to the judge about this. And it's important to me what you said, that there should be a sign or a light on the right, and there's none.
Well, there should also be a limit line, either painted or implied, but there should be it should be clear where you're supposed to stop. That should be clear.
Well, there's a crosswalk.
The crosswalk would be the limit line. The first,
I know.
Okay, yeah. So the first line, yeah, that would be considered the limit line.
Well, there are crosswalks all over, and you don't have to stop at them.
Often at an intersection, be very careful about stopping at the crosswalks when you have to. Always be mindful of where the cross traffic is. There may be a situation where you have to yield. I wish you luck.
Well, I know.
Take your pictures.
I know that.
Okay. Bring your pictures, stand
Thank
your
you
ground,
your
but be deferential. James, we wish you the best of luck. Barely
Thank
time
for
in for
help.
One last call. Let me turn it to Susan in Fairfax. You're on your legal rights.
Hi, yes, I have two quick questions. Choose which to answer. One is that I'm an engineer, and instruments have to be calibrated regularly to be accurate. I was wondering, what is the law on the calibration of these various has been stopping drivers, and as I understand it, they have no right to ask for a person's license or their documentation. They are not given that authority. So choose which one you want to answer. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, stay with us because your call broke up a little bit. So I caught what you said about calibration, but we didn't catch what the reference was. Were you talking about speed cameras or
breathalyzers? I was talking about that. I've never been stopped, but as an engineer, I know that any instrument has to be calibrated regularly to be accurate. My second question was about ICE having the ability and what I have understood to be illegal, stopping people and asking for their license and then asking for their documentation. I understand they do not have that authority.
You're okay. First of all, you're correct. Devices do have to be calibrated. If you contest a DUI case and you go to trial, the government will have to prove that the device was properly calibrated. So 100%, you're dead on right about that.
And your attorney will get both a maintenance log and a usage log, so you can follow up on that device and see what it's been used for, if it's been working, and how it's been maintained.
Yes, and on ICE, it is obscene what is going on with ICE. Excuse me. I mean, I might be. It is obscene. The federal government has taken unprecedented enforcement action. They're using the military to do law enforcement on U.S. citizens. They are having ICE, Homeland Security Police doing unprecedented and essentially illegal detentions. What the Trump administration, not to get too political, but what the Trump administration is doing is that they are saying, we're going to do what we want, and who is going to stop us? Who is going to stop us? We're the executive branch. Basically, it's the fox watching the hen house, because the executive branch has to do the enforcement. So they're getting away with it.
The other piece of that is that they've taken the position that the Constitution only applies to citizens, which is completely
insane.
Wrong. It applies the same to citizens, non-citizens. Anybody listening, strongly recommend you don't volunteer, you don't submit to search, you don't say anything to submit to their authority unnecessarily if there's no reason to do it. That applies to citizens and non-citizens. You don't have to volunteer your papers unless they pull you over. But if you're here lawfully, have something with you so you can walk away. Don't die on that hill. If you're here and you're an immigrant, you have limited rights for the first 2 years you're here. So have something with you that shows that you've been here, so that if you do have that encounter, at least you have the right to state your case. At least you get a hearing out of it. Show them something that you've been there. Carry utility bills that go back, your kids' report cards, something, whatever you can carry that shows, look, I've been here more than 2 years.
And record the encounters. Don't be afraid to pull out your cell phone and record the encounter. And hopefully, if they end up taking your phone from you, which is likely illegal, it'll upload to your cloud so that you can still get the video. And this is unprecedented.
Susan, thanks for joining us. I'm afraid we're out of time. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We're working on some interesting programs. Next week at 6, we go behind the headlines of some of those Supreme Court rulings with Jim Brosnahan. Tonight, we've been discussing tickets, traffic court, and the Department of Motor Vehicles. My guest tonight has been from San Francisco, David Uthman, from the law offices of David Uthman and the San Francisco Traffic Law Clinic. And again, please tune in next week to Your Legal Rights, where we examine what are those decisions at the Supreme Court and why can't they seem to get it right? Well, right they do. As always, we'll take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, David Uthman, for joining us. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. A big send-off, Joanne. Thank you. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe, have a great night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.